is a little bit higher in the weights, a mark of 50. Just might find that one out. So I'm going to go.
This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. A chilly Sunday morning. So I was driving in. The weather person on the radio said, you're currently 45 degrees. Come on, it's the middle of September. I mean, it's still not officially even fall yet. We're getting there. We're close. But, boy, the last few days, and I think it's going to continue for a couple more days at least before we get back to a little semblance of the end of the warm weather. But, yeah, a little chilly this morning, but some people like it. Crisp. It was crisp, and it was sunny, and I guess that counts for something. But happy to have you on board for this morning's edition of Racing Across America. Let me remind you that today at the Clubhouse Racebook, it is an NFL Sunday. So keep that in mind. If you'd like to choose us as your venue for watching the races, come on down. You can catch all the football action as well as all the racing action right here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. On today's show, we still have a couple more of our Gary Contessa tape pieces left. And this morning we have an interview coming up a little bit later on, Gary did with Jeff Bloom, a prominent owner, really enthusiastic guy. On the racing side of the game, and so that'll come up a little bit later on. We'll do some handicapping in the next segment, but as always at the top of the show, a little review of some of the stakes action. And again, yesterday was kind of a lull stakes-wise, other than Woodbine. There was the nice opening weekend stake at Belmont. We'll touch on that as well, the Belmont Oaks. But Woodbine with the Woodbine mile card was really the focus. I'll be interested to see their handle numbers for yesterday. I didn't see anything when I went over the news last night that looked at those. But I would think, again, they were kind of the gorilla in the room yesterday with the Woodbine Mile and the supporting stakes. So I'm sure it had to work out to be a good afternoon for them. Because this Woodbine Mile, I said it yesterday, and we talked with Ernie Perry from Woodbine. It was really a fun field. March to the Arch and War of Will came in for Mark Cassie and were both completely logical. And I think they were the favorite and the second choice at 2-1 and 5-2. I was a little bit surprised that War of Will was taking the action over March to the Arch. The morning line said that. I tilted towards March to the Arch coming off the win in the King Edward in the prior start. Betting public was looking a little more at the Maker's Mark win for War of Will. So again, they tilted slightly towards War of Will over March to the Arch. But also in the field, Cheryl Spite, the promising three-year-old. This looked like a salty spot for Cheryl Spite. But Chad and Klarovich sent value proposition up. Admiralty Pier was also entered in the Singspiel, elected to go in the Woodbine Mile, and the Marvelous Mayor for Kevin Attard, Starship Jubilee, also in the field. And a few of those names were prominent as it got to the wire. We'll take a look at the stretch run, and Starship Jubilee at 5-1 gets it done. We saw her win the Ballston Spa up here early in the Saratoga meet. Then she came back from the Diana and was fourth there behind Rushing Fall and Mean Mary as they kind of went out and loped along on the front end. Too tough to make up ground there. But Starship Jubilee, the number four. Kevin Attard said about this point as they pulled away, he was feeling pretty good. But March to the Arts, the number one, makes a nice late run. War of Will, the number eight, runs third in there. So the Mark Cassie runners run second and third. March to the Arch just, boy, was sitting in the back of the pack, back of the pack, back of the pack, and then made that nice run to get up there and be a pretty good second. Chart margin was a length from Starship Jubilee to March to the Arch. March to the Arch to War of Will was three quarters of a length, and then War of Will was ahead in front of Olympic Runner, who rank outsider in the field at 58-1. And we were sitting in here, I was talking with the guys in the control room after the race, and we were looking at the Superfecta payoff. Again, it's 5-1, 2-1. It's 5-1, 5-2, 2-1, and 58-1. So you had three of the logical players running in the first three spots, and that led to a 20-cent trifecta of $12. But the 58-1 shot kicks up the Superfecta. So the trifecta is $12. The 20-cent Superfecta, $139. So that got juiced up quite a bit by Olympic Runner as the rank outsider getting in. Disappointment, Cheryl Spite, who was the third choice at 7-2, winds up seventh in the field of eight. And Value Proposition, the Chad Klarovich runner, is last in the field of eight. But Starship Jubilee, I mean, just, boy. And this horse was a claim. Let me go back and claimed for $16,000 early in the 2017 Gulfstream meet. Now she has banked $2 million, over $2 million, by adding the $600,000 purse, you know, winner's share of the purse yesterday. So a multi-millionaire. And now they have to decide. This was a win and you're in to the Breeders' Cup race, a Breeders' Cup mile. The follow-up in the racing forum said decision has to be made. It seemed like listening to post-race comment, when I say post-race, I mean literally when the commentator caught up to Kevin Attard as the horses were coming back towards the winner's circle, he seemed to be leaning towards that. And you would have to think off of this race, they would give serious consider, very, very serious consideration to going to the Breeders' Cup mile. But she was just phenomenal. Again, it's been fun to see her come up to Saratoga. She tried the Ballston Spa last year and ran third, came up this year and won the Ballston Spa before, again, that fourth in the kind of pace-compromised Diana, but beats the boys. And I believe, I'm not sure whether the article that I pulled up here, I read, I believe she's the first female to win the Woodbine Mile. So just a nice achievement all around. Starship Jubilee, Kevin Attard and team. Stein was riding. And I didn't realize it until the post-race interview. He had actually retired for a while and has come back. So he's come back at the top of his game because I believe he is still leading the pack as far as the jockeys up at Woodbine, and then he adds a Woodbine mile to his resume as well aboard Starship Jubilee. So again, nice race there, and again, nice race also from the two Cassie runners as well. All right, let's shift attention one race later. The Woodbine Cares on a day of four stakes races. The Woodbine Cares was for two-year-old fillies going five on the grass. The stretch run here will be number two, Dirty Dangle, over number seven, Illegal Smile. I like Illegal Smile. That one did go off as the favorite at 9-5. So it's two, Dirty Dangle, seven, Illegal Smile, and number six, Rocket Reload. I had Illegal Smile and Rocket Reload in the 1-2 position, but you can see coming late, they will get run down by Dirty Dangle, who I had right underneath those two. So they were all three of those were in my mix, just in kind of reversed order. But this one, Dirty Dangle, was coming off a maiden special weight career debut victory. The number was a little light, but you were probably kind of hinted at this one having the ability to do what She did yesterday when you looked at the August 30th workout. The debut effort was on August 16th. And again, wins the debut effort, so comes into this making only the second start of the career. But on August 30th, a couple weeks after that debut victory up at Woodbine, works a bullet in 46-1. Subsequently, the most recent workout coming into this 47 and change, that was pretty good. But that 46-1 said that she came out of the debut effort in fine form and maybe was ready to improve off of that. She looked good yesterday with that nice stretch run to get it done in only the second career start, winning the Woodbine Cares yesterday. And again, a legal smile and rocket reload with a little more experience, both of those. But they ran decently to be second and third. Alda, I said when we talked to Ernie Perry yesterday, maybe you'd get a little barometer on Alda, who runs one of the stakes races, one of the two nice two-year-old stakes races today up at Woodbine. I think if you liked Alda, the second place finish by a legal smile will not push you off of Alda, because I think Dirty Dangle is going to turn out to be a nice one there. All right, let's go to the other graded stakes race on the program yesterday, the Singspiel. Again, another nice field in here. I had Nakamura on top. I thought Tis a Slam was interesting, the winner of the race last year. Skywire for Mark Cassie was another one that was interesting, as was Standard Deviation. Nakamura and Standard Deviation both going out for Graham Motion, but it was none of those, as it is Court again, the number 8 horse, getting it done at 9-1. Sir Sahib at 13-1 runs second, the number 2 horse, and number 1 Say the Word at 8-1 runs third. So kind of an unexpected result, but who's the trainer here? Gail Cox. And when we talked to Ernie Perry yesterday, we kind of reviewed last week's stakes races, and last week, of course, the Queen's Plate and the Canadian, and Gail Cox had upset the Canadian last week, and that, as I was talking to Ernie, I said, well, she upset the Woodbine Mile last year with El Tormenta, 40-1, it was a big price, and so I said, when I was talking to Ernie Perry, I guess you got to watch Gail Cox on those big days. Little did I know. Little did I pay attention to my own thought process there. But Count Again gets it done, $21.10. I will say, I had some value taken away from the morning line. The morning line was 20-1. But this is a horse that I suppose you could have made a case for. Number-wise, was probably going to have to step it up against some of these. And I haven't seen the numbers yet today. But it was a horse that was lightly raced, 5 starts, a 5-year-old with only 5 starts, a couple of wins, a second, and 2/3. Had missed last time out just by a smidge behind Woodbridge, who was another runner in the Singspiel yesterday. That one wound up, 5th in there? But again, being fairly lightly raced and, you know, maybe having to move forward a little bit and seeming to come into this race in maybe good and improving form. And with Gail Cox in his corner, you know, you could have made the case for Count Again. I didn't. The horses I like, Nakamura winds up 4th, Standard Deviation 6th. Tis a Slam, who set the early pace and looked pretty good. I mean, it was an easy early pace. I thought Tis a Slam, off a couple of disappointing efforts, had the chance to rebound, particularly off of those early fractions, but faded to be 7th. Skywire winds up 8th in the field of 9. So again, the horses I liked wound up disappointing a little bit, but it was Gail Cox and Count Again getting it done. A little bit of a price in there. Again, 9-1, $21 and change. And finally, a little bit earlier on the card, the third race, actually. And I wanted to show this one because, again, it goes back to talking to Ernie Perry yesterday. The Ontario Racing was the flip side of the Woodbine Cares. The Ontario Racing was 2-year-old males going the 5 on the grass. And there was a nice promising runner from Wesley Ward in here, Amsden. I liked that one at even money. So did the betting public. That one was making headway early, but was getting a pretty good challenge as well. 21-4, 45, and so the fractions eventually caught up to Amstead. But coming late is the number two, Credit River. You see there, pulls out back of the pack, makes a nice late charge under Emma Jane Wilson, and gets it done at 41-1 in the field of six. The longest price in there, but more notable, this was a maiden, not just a maiden. This was a horse who had not started before. And so that was a night. Look at the horse just stride out there on the gallop out. This is a nice little two-year-old. 20-1 on the morning line, went off at 41-1. But again, it harkens back to the conversation with Ernie Perry. And I won't say he touted the horse necessarily, but talking to Ernie yesterday as we kind of went over this field, he said, Credit River, the connections were really high on the horse. And that was enough for me to put the horse down in what eventually was the third spot in my mix. I liked the Wesley Ward runner. I had Credit River in the third spot, but the horse I had in the second spot scratched. So Credit River eventually moved up to second in my mix with Sky's Not Falling, the Trombetta runner, in the third spot. And they ran 1-2, Credit River and Sky's Not Falling for Trombetta. As I say, the four-horse Amsden eventually faded to last in there. But, again, going back to, as I say, Ernie didn't necessarily tout the horse, but did say the connections were high, understandably so. And I think I have the quotes here from Emma Jane Wilson after the race was in the winner's circle talking. Horse comes by his talent naturally, and she kind of reiterated, not only did Ernie talk about the connections being high on the horse, but Emma Jane Wilson talked a little bit about the breeding out of a mare called Like a Gem. And as Emma said, his mom was a multiple stakes winner that I used to ride. Ernie reiterated she was a nice horse. One of his siblings is a grade one winner. To see him flourish on the turf is no surprise. And Emma Jane continued, it was a tough task for a first-time starter, but he showed his talent today. I just let him get his legs. He got away from there okay, but he's not nearly as quick as those guys were early. So the quick pace played, but as you saw, it was high inside the eighth pole, still sitting behind the other runners, and then tips out and just goes by. I gathered him up, and then when I asked him to pick it up, he didn't even hesitate. He was all business. So nice little career debut in a $135,000 stake for Credit River. And again, if you were watching, we talked a little bit about that one on OTB Live yesterday, referring to Ernie, and certainly yesterday during Racing Across America, Ernie talking about the connections being high. And taking it, just taking a shot with a maiden in a stakes race, you have to figure they're high. But to get that reiterated from Ernie was enough to toss that one in a little bit of a price in the Ontario Racing yesterday up at Woodbine. Finally, let's shift our attention down to Belmont, the opening Saturday fall meet stakes race, the Belmont Oaks. I liked Antoinette, talked with Anthony Stabile yesterday. He also liked Antoinette. We were both kind of thinking, you know what, five-horse field, she maybe goes out and does just what she did in the Saratoga Oaks and kind of takes them all the way around with a soft lead and has plenty left in the stretch. We both noted, though, that Magic Attitude coming in from Europe, could be any kind, was coming out of a couple of Group 1 races over there. So there was the potential that Magic Attitude would just run away and hide. But I thought Antoinette was, again, interesting with some speed potentially in a small field. And it kind of played out both ways as, yes, correct that Antoinette went out and set, a modest pace. Antoinette, the number two horse, number five horse. But you can see Magic Attitude, once she gets rolling, she's just best. Coming out of those Group 1s in Europe, she rolls. But Antoinette, the number five, holds on nicely for second. She set some reasonable fractions, 24 and change, 49 and change, 114 and change. I thought that might be enough as, again, in a small field with kind of a tepid pace, Magic Attitude, who was sitting in the back of the pack, was going to have a lot to do, but she just proved to be much, much the best there coming over from Europe for Lyell and Arnaud Delacour. After the race, Delacour kind of said maybe the QE2 down at Keeneland, as that is a turf race for three-year-old fillies. So she would get to stay in her own age group and go in a nice grade one down at Keeneland. But it comes up in 3 weeks. And so he said, you know, we're going to see how the horse comes out of the race. That would be a kind of a quick turnaround. If we can make it, that'll be the game plan. But we'll see what the filly says after the race. Bill Mott, after the race, was, you know, just said, got beaten. Bill Mott from Antoinette just got beaten by a better horse today. My horse did everything she was supposed to do and everything she could. That was just a better filly today. Magic Attitude coming over from Europe. So Belmont Oaks goes to Magic Attitude. Javier Castellano on board. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll do a little handicapping. I think we'll take maybe a look at the early pick five at Belmont and more as Racing Across America continues on a Sunday morning. Again, thanks for joining us. We'll be back in a couple.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player? To have a better knowledge of the game? To be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Stone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
But here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on a Sunday morning. Seth Merrow in the studio. Happy to have you on board. And as promised, a little handicapping. And again, we'll be back in a couple hours with OTB Live for Sunday afternoon, taking a look at Woodbine. A couple of nice stakes up at Woodbine, some Churchill, some Belmont Park as well. So we'll have a closer look related to the live odds. And by then, we'll know the scratches as well. But give you a head start on Belmont. We'll go through that early pick five. Play of the day on the one sheet today. And again, if you don't know about or haven't picked up the one sheet, if you go to capitalotb.com, click on the handicapping link, drop-down menu. There's a handicapper's report link. You click on that, and you come up with the one sheet. It's a nice printable PDF. One side has the picks for one or two tracks given the day of the week, and then the other side has Brian Otto's matrix, and he's looking at the Kentucky races this fall, so he'll have Churchill on there today. But again, you can have a nice printable sheet to take with you if you're headed out to the racebook. Usually you can pick it up at the racebook, but if you're headed out to a parlor or an Easy Bet, or if you just want to sit it next to your computer as you're playing at home, the one sheet available every day. And they tweeted out last night, Mike Callahan and I looked at Belmont with the big day at Woodbine. I handicapped the Woodbine card for the sheet as well. Mike Callahan also did the Woodbine card. And we did a Costanza. We went out on a high note as race 12 at Woodbine yesterday. Mike and I both liked the 10 horse, who was 9-2 on the morning line and wound up going off at 9-1. So doubled up the morning line odds and got it done at $23. So if you were paying attention a little later in the day to the one sheet, and again, kind of a meeting of the minds with the handicappers, you wound up with a little bit of value at the end of the Woodbine card yesterday. We'll see if you can give some decent ideas at Belmont this morning. In the opener, my play of the day on the sheet today, I'm taking a little poke with a four-horse exacta box in the opener because I have some horses that if the morning line holds up can be okay, and I'm leaving out the Chad Brown horse, who I think will take some money. We'll see if that's a mistake. I mean, Chad Brown with a firster from Shadwell, who I think is going to be a good horse. As I say, that may be a mistake. I just found some others a little more interesting. I put Lily Simone on top. I have it 1, 6, 5, and 7 in the opener at Belmont. Lily Simone goes out for Dave Donk, who is on just a nice little roll right through Saratoga and continuing early here at Belmont. But by Hardspun, Hardspun's okay with debut runners. There are a couple of workouts underneath that says this filly is on her toes. There was a sibling called Vision Perfect that you might remember. Third in debut, won the second start, then ran second, and then won a couple of stakes races. So three wins, including two stakes races in the first five starts of the career for the sibling. So I think there's win early, top and bottom. You're getting 10-1 on the morning line. So I'll take a little shot with Lily Simone. I'm not thrilled about the inside post position because, you know, debut runners, you see it all the time. When you look at the head-on shot of these, you know, two-year-old races with first-time starters on the inside, they tend to take the left. There's nobody there. Let me take the left turn. So, again, I'm not thrilled about the inside post position, but we'll hope Lily Simone and Dylan Davis can negotiate that and, again, live up to what I find a little bit interesting, maybe with the breeding, some workouts that are okay, and as I say, Donk on a little bit of a roll as well. Todd Pletcher has a firster by Mishawish, Cadencia, who, you know, Mishawish, brand new on the scene. We'll see what that one can do. So I'm just kind of thinking, let's see if I can get a little bit ahead of the curve, potentially, with a sire who knows, maybe we'll make some noise. And as I say, let's get ahead of the curve and maybe get a price on a firster from Todd Pletcher. They paid $115,000 for this horse at Ocala this year. So clearly there were some things to like. The workouts seemed pretty good, including the latest workout on the 12th, which was a nice 47 and change. So Cadencia at 9-2 seems live. Uptown Flirt has some experience for Bill Mott, and experience counts, certainly. This one, third behind Plum Alley in the career debut up at Saratoga, followed that up with a decent little second last time. And so, again, I think experience counts, and the first two starts from this one have been okay. And then Momentita in the third spot. I went back and forth on the fourth spot, but I landed on the other Mott. And as they say, I went back and forth. Momentita has some experience, but I like the Cairo Prince runners enough that I went with the Bill Mott first-time starter, Wemyss Harvey, at 15-1. And as I say, that's why I went with the exacta boxes of play of the day. Top pick is 10-1. Wemyss Harvey, who I think is playable in here, at 15-1. But I like Cairo Prince, first-time starters. Bill Mott, I have said it the last few days, last weekend of Saratoga, last day or a couple of days, he had a couple of first-time starters get the job done. And so I think he's on maybe a little bit of a roll with some of his two-year-olds. And again, with Cairo Prince as the sire, I'll toss that one in the mix as well. So again, this is the play of the day on the one sheet. We'll find out if I regret leaving out the Chad Brown horse. That's clearly the one that scares me. Otherwise, I think, yeah, and Tony Dutrow has Twirling Candy firster. That horse could be a little bit live at a price as well. We'll see. But again, with a couple of prices in the mix, I thought maybe have some fun with a little exacta box to start the day off. 1, 6, 5, and 7 at Belmont in the opener. Race number two at Belmont this afternoon, state bred allowance non-winners and one runners going six. I have it 5, 6, 1, and 2. I put Harris Bay on top. Goes out for John Kimmel and just seems to be in some good and potentially improving form. Had a January to August layoff. Since then, a couple of starts up at Saratoga. They were clearly improved efforts. Improved and improving. Came back with a lifetime best buyer number, 2nd of August. Improved on that number. It improved on the finishing position in the follow-up on the 30th of August. So, again, just seems to be moving in the right direction, in good form right now. Harris Bay on top. I'm not sure. 7-5 favorite. We'll see what the odds are as they get closer to post time. I'm not sure this horse is that much of a standout with this bunch, that this horse deserves to be 7-5, and the second favorite is the the one at 3-1. But we'll see how it shakes out with the betting public. And as I say, I'm not sure I believe in 7-5 because Ricken, the number 6 horse, has plenty of early speed, tends to lose a little heart in the stretch and gets passed, but speed is always dangerous. And the last time this horse was seen at Belmont, 2 straight wins. Up at Saratoga, again, kind of threw in the towel after leading in a couple of those races. Those were also state-bred allowance races, whereas the Belmont races were open company. So class-wise, maybe it's a little bit of a tougher road to hoe in here for Ricken. But I'm going to look at the return to Belmont, that early speed, and put the Dave Donk trainee underneath. In this third spot, I will use Inside Info, who's the second choice on the morning line at 3-1. Luis Saez on board. Last few times he was on board, this horse has run decently. Tossed in, maybe a little bit of a clunker last time, but that was in a turf sprint up at Saratoga. I think getting back to the main track will be a tonic that puts Inside Info in the mix today. On a best effort, Big Thicket, also one worth considering. But in the second at Belmont, 5, 6, 1, and 2. Third race at Belmont, maiden special, 2-year-olds going 6 furlongs on the grass. In the third, I have it 4, 2, 9, and 7. I put voter protection on top. I'm a broken record when I talk about this, but whenever I look at these 2-year-old races in New York, Chad Brown and Klarovich, if they have a first-time starter, I'm automatically attracted to this one. Sold at Ocala earlier this year. Worked 21.1 before that sale. And this is a sibling to Musical Romance. That was the really talented runner for our friend Adam Lazarus, who we have interviewed here on the show a few times. Boy, he wound up with a nice horse there. Musical Romance started her career running third, then fourth, and won in the third career start. Maybe more notably won the 2011 Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. So I think there's some real breeding potency here, kind of signaled by the price, too, $175,000, as I say, in that 21.1 work live. The workouts leading into this race over at Monmouth look pretty good. So I'll tilt towards voter protection. I'm going to be interested to see, you know, with the breeding. The bettors in New York are savvy. They're going to pick up on the breeding, and they're going to know that this horse worked well down at Ocala. And it's Chad and Klarovich. Will we get that 6-1? I'll be interested to see how that works out this afternoon. Second slot, I'll go with Fighting Force. $400,000 paid for this one at Ocala after working 20.4. The sire is okay with first out runners. The dam produced a sibling called Lucky Jingle, third in the debut, and then won the second career start. So again, there's some win early there. Tabor, Magnier, Todd Pletcher, potent connections, paid a lot at the sale, worked well at the sale, some breeding, all the things I like in these kind of races. So Fighting Force in the third spot, or in the second spot. In the third spot, Realm of Law, the other Chad Brown runner. Although I say that, this one on the morning line is actually the shorter price. Goes out for Judmont, Warfront on top. There's a sibling called Falimbi that was third in the debut and then won the second start. I prefer the Klarovich runner, but again, it's 6-1 versus 2-1 for Realm of Law. Realm of Law is the Chad Brown runner, and voter protection is the other, the longer priced of the uncoupled entry. But for me in the third race, 4, 2, 9, and 7. Race number 4 at Belmont this afternoon, $32,000 plain vanilla claimers going the one-turn mile down at Belmont. In the fourth, I have a 3-1, 6-4. I'll put Super Dude on top. First off, the claim for Rudy Rodriguez off a nice win up at Saratoga. Claimed away from Mike Maker and, again, moves into the Rudy barn. Claimed for 20, comes back for 32, but had been facing better for the majority of the page. So I think got some notable class relief last time, and probably they were saying, you know, let's get a win and maybe if we lose the horse, you know, we walk away with some money. They did lose the horse. They got the win. But I don't think this move to 32 is going to be an obstacle because, as I say, virtually all the races except for that last race on the page are better than this 32. So I think it's still going to be class-wise in the comfort zone. Super Dude on top. Malibu Pro in the second spot. Nice win last time at a 20 tag. Claimed out of that one. Moved up to 40 last time at Saratoga. And ran an okay third. 6.5 furlongs, 2 back, 7 furlongs last time. Now stretches to the mile. I just kind of like that angle as well. Horse that's in some good form. Gets that next step off the last couple of sprints. And should run well for Dylan Davis. And in the third spot, we'll go out to number 6, Family Biz. Good second place finish last time behind Malibu Pro. That was 2 starts ago for Malibu Pro, but it was just last time for Family Biz. Claimed out of that one by Rob Falcone. Claimed for $20,000, moves up to $32,000. But like Super Dude, there are some races on the page that indicate the 32 is still, again, right in the comfort zone. Fourth race at Belmont, 3, 1, 6, and 4. And finally, in the fifth race to complete that early pick 5 at Belmont today. This one is a little bit, because I have a couple of AEs in here. I'm going to give a slew of numbers, but it all depends on early scratches and who gets in. I have it 15, 11, 9, and 1. 15 is an AE and 3 deep on the AE list. So will that one get in? I don't know. If not, take a look at the 5 and take a look at the 14 as well. If that one gets in, that's 2 deep on the AE list. So I have the 15 on top, the 14 down on the bottom. So again, I'll reel off the numbers one more time. 15, 11, 9, 1, 5, and 14. But we'll see. I mean, 2 and 3 deep on the AE list, it becomes a little bit dicey for those. But if Kept Waiting gets in, just looks to have the edge on this bunch. Goes maiden special weight to maiden claiming, and on the buyers does have that edge. Body of the field, She's So Naughty, has tried this 40 maiden company in the last couple of starts. Nice improved effort last time, at least as far as the number. And that was also with a move to turf. So now back on the turf, stretching out to the mile off of that race last time. I think the Rudy Rodriguez runner with Joel Rosario on board, She's So Naughty, is logical. And Running on Empty comes in off a couple of okay efforts number-wise for Jimmy Toner. Third start back. I think the numbers are competitive with this bunch, and to be really competitive, probably has to move forward a little bit, but I think that is possible, again, in this third start back of the season. Lucky Lotkeys for Christophe Clement also seems to be in good form and fits with this group. 2 Cent Tootsie could be a player as well on the numbers fired, although this is a long time loser, so to speak. 14 tries and hasn't gotten it done yet, but looks to fit with this group. So again, in the fifth at Belmont, 15, 11, 9, and 1, depending on the AEs. Also look at the 5 and the 14. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, as promised earlier, still have a couple of the Gary Contessa taped interviews in the can that we didn't get a chance to get to during the Saratoga meet. One of those is coming up right after the break. He talked with owner Jeff Bloom. Great guy. We've had him on the show in previous years at Saratoga, but Gary had a chance to catch up with him. Enthusiastic guy, prominent owner. So up next, after the break, it's Gary Contessa and Jeff Bloom. Stay tuned.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play. In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
The New York hero, 'tis the law, and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
When New York bred Tis the Law won the 2020 Belmont Stakes, OTB TV was live with owner Jack Nolan to capture all the excitement.
And certainly, seeing what he did today, we think a mile and a quarter is well within his range, and hopefully he can prove it at Saratoga Raceway.
For exclusive interviews and racing information, stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV and win more.
Contessa with Capital OTB, and this morning we're pleased to have with us Jeff Bloom. And for those of you who don't know who Jeff is, you're about to find out. Jeff Bloom is the head of Bloom Racing, and right now they race one of the best fillies in the world, Midnight Bizoo, and she has just been an unbelievable filly for you. Tell us a little bit about that, Jeff.
How much time do we have?
Sum it up. No, all the time you want. We're here to do this.
She's just been an unbelievable, incredible fantasy come true for us from the start till current time. And you know, we've just been on the ride of a lifetime that we want to keep going with her and enjoy all the thrills and excitement that she's provided to us. But, you know, it's so hard to come by racehorses that have this kind of consistency and heart and success like she does. And it's been an incredible ride.
I think Midnight Bizoo is the kind of filly that every owner dreams about having one day, and that's what keeps us going. We wake up every morning waiting for that horse, because every horse that walks through that barn door could be Midnight Bizoo until proven otherwise.
Well, that's the thing, Gary. As you said, you know, the good horses can come from anywhere, and there's oftentimes you might have a horse in your portfolio that you think is going to turn out to be one like Midnight, and doesn't always work out. When it does, you know, you've been in this game a long time. And so I don't take anything for granted. I mean, each and every day when I get up in the morning, I understand the significance of how fortunate we are to be involved with a horse like Midnight Bizoo.
And, you know, Cot Campbell used to say it best when he did these owner seminars, that a managing partner like yourself is so pounded with negativity. You get negative reports every day from your trainers, problems, horses getting sick, horses getting bone injuries, soft tissue injuries, that when Midnight Bizoo comes along, it kind of erases all that negativity, at least for the time being, and you start fresh again. It's pretty amazing how a horse like that can just bring everything back into perspective for you.
Maybe a good analogy is like in golf. I mean, for many of us that aren't professional golfers, we can go out and have a good round, and you might be hitting 17 consistent holes where you can't get close to finding the green, and then you hit that one good shot, and it keeps you coming back for more. Midnight Bizoo has just been the absolute model of consistency, not just in terms of her abilities on the racetrack and the successes that she's had, but the fact that day in, day out, from day one, from the time that she began her career, she consistently goes out there. She's got beautiful mechanics, the way she's put together. She takes care of herself from a soundness standpoint and ability standpoint. And yeah, like you said, it's easy for a horse like Midnight Bizoo to make you forget about some of the other situations you've had.
And for our viewers that don't know, Midnight Bizoo has 22 starts, 13 wins, 6 seconds, 3/3. She has never been out of the money in her life, and she's made $7,400,000 and may even be in line to make a little more depending on the outcome in Sortie. So she is just an amazing, amazing filly. But what I really want to talk about a little bit right now is Jeff Bloom. We know who you are today and we know what you're doing today, but let's take it back, Jeff. Let's go back to high school. Let's talk about you. You're in high school, you're kind of jockey size. Tell us about your first interactions with horses. What made you decide to come into the horse industry? Like, when did that start coming into your mind? And what, step us along and tell us about your life to where you got to today.
Sure, Gary. So I grew up in San Diego, not too far from the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. And so my oldest brother, Michael, when I was very young, he had just gotten his, I believe he had just gotten his driver's license, or it must have been when he was 18, because you had to be 18 years old to bet, I guess. But it was sometime when I was very young. I'm about 5 years younger than Michael. We went to Del Mar, never been there, no connection to horse racing whatsoever, always loved animals. And you're right about my size. I was a small guy. We walked through the gates and went straight to the saddling paddock. And I saw these majestic animals walking around the paddock ring. And the jockeys walked into the paddock with their colorful silks on, and they got a leg up on the horses. And I looked over at my brother and I said, I'm going to do that. That's what I want to do. Came home, told my parents. They thought I was crazy. Of course, they ignored it. And make a long story short, I was so persistent about figuring out how I could go about becoming a jockey. I'd never even been on a horse before. And, you know, we didn't have internet back then. We didn't have access to information. And I just somehow or another got a hold of one of the stewards in Southern California who took a liking to me because I kept calling and calling. He introduced me to a gentleman by the name of Muzzy Francis, used to be a jockey, and ended up becoming the general manager of the San Luis Rey Downs Thoroughbred Training Center. I called him up, called him up again. And he said, I'll tell you what, if your parents are willing to bring you out here, I'll have a conversation with you. And ended up moving to San Luis Rey Downs right before my sophomore year of high school, and lived in the tack room and started learning about being around the horses. I started out as a hot walker and eventually made my way into groom. And so Muzzy told my parents that if Jeff sticks with this and he's willing to get up early in the morning and show that he has an interest, we'll let him come back after he finishes his sophomore year in high school. The day of getting out of school after my sophomore year, I had my parents drive me out, and the rest was history. Moved in with Muzzy and his family at that point, and he trained me to be a rider, rode my first race here at Del Mar when I was 18 years old in front of a hometown crowd.
And how many years did you ride? How long did that your jockey career last?
Yeah, it was about 9.5 years with major gaps in between. I had numerous injuries that were extended. So from start to finish, it ended up being about 9.5 years at the end of my riding career. I had already started going back to school because I wanted to get a degree and have an education to fall back on. Even though I still had so much passion for the racing industry, but start to finish was about 9.5 years.
And from what I remember, you used to work for Charlie Whittingham, and I think you got on Sunday Silence. That's a heck of a opportunity for you, huh?
So I had an incredible experience in terms of my involvement in and around the horses before I transitioned into what I'm doing now. And so when I stopped riding races, I became the main workout rider for Charlie, and that was when he had Ferdinand, Sunday Silence, Goodbye Halo, all kinds of incredible grade one success stories. And so on a day in, day out basis, all I did was work these phenomenal racehorses, including getting the opportunity to get on the back of Sunday Silence when he was a 2-year-old.
Boy, what a great opportunity. And then so now you're riding for Charlie Whittingham. Tell us about the transition to Bloom Racing Stable, because it's become such a powerful stable. You know, I even had a chance to train and win a race for you at one time. And it's become, you know, it's not an easy thing to develop a racing stable, but certainly Midnight Bizou is going to help. Tell us about that transition of you going into this side of the business.
Yeah, so following my riding career, I did get a degree in financial services from San Diego State University. And even though I kept my foot in the door in racing during that time, more on the media and marketing side, I left the industry to have a real job and got heavily involved in the software technology services world. And the whole time I was outside of racing, I was just so bored about, you know, not having a passion for my work. And one day I decided that I'm coming back into horse racing full-time, 100%. And many years ago, when I came back in, I started the West Coast operation for West Point Thoroughbreds out here in California, and had a really nice run working with the folks at West Point. And after about 7+ years, decided it was time to go out on my own and start my own program. And I had the support of some incredible people behind me, individuals like Andrew Yaffe, who's still with me today, David Batchelder, who's still with me today. And because of those guys, I was able to go out on my own and have some great mentoring and support behind me to go ahead and start up Bloom Racing Stable.
Now, would you consider Bloom Racing Stable to be a public operation? Can somebody pick up the phone and call you and become a part of that? Or how does that work?
So when we first started out, we were doing public syndications where we were looking for outside investors to get involved with a number of different horses that were syndicated. We've evolved and modified our program somewhat since then. I have some partners in Chuck and Lori Allen who merged with the original Bloom Racing Stable. And so we have some other folks, as I mentioned, Andrew Yaffe's name earlier, some folks that are investors with us on a number of the activities we're involved in, both breeding, pin hooking, and our racing interests. We're not necessarily doing public syndications anymore, but occasionally we will have a situation where we will have outside investors participate on some of the things we're doing.
Great. Tell us about the purchase of Midnight Bizou. Where did she catch your eye? Did she catch your eye or someone else's? How did she come to be a part of Bloom Racing?
Sure. So I do 100% of all the acquisition for Bloom Racing. I'm not only a bloodstock agent for our own program, but I do have some private clients that I go out and acquire horses for as well. So Midnight Bizou was a horse that I purchased as a 2-year-old at the OBS spring sale. And, you know, I'll never forget, there were two horses that I really felt I had to have out of that sale. And Gary, you know how it can be very challenging to secure the horses that you really want to have, you know, with limited budget in your pocket. So Snapper Sinclair and Midnight Bizou were two horses that I decided one way or another, I was going to have to figure out a way to get both of those horses. And Midnight was a horse that I didn't think she would be overly expensive, although the sale was very strong. And I really wasn't sure I had enough funds when I walked into that ring. And to this day, I don't know what number I would have stopped at, but when the hammer dropped at $80,000, I was, as you can imagine, incredibly excited to be the one that ended up being able to sign the ticket for.
Wow, that's amazing. Because $80,000 these days does not happen very often. When you go into the ring and you really like a horse, you got to be prepared to do battle. And it gets really tough out there.
It really does. And you know, that year in particular, the market was just so hot. And, you know, it's a funny thing. I always set a budget and I decide a valuation on a horse, and typically I'll allow that adjustment in the 15-20% range depending upon market conditions. And both Snapper Sinclair and Midnight Bizou were horses that I was willing to go outside of that zone, which I almost never do. Fortunately, I didn't have to on either of them. And yeah, like looking back, I kind of get goosebumps thinking about that. I was able to sneak her out of there for that price.
And we know that it's so, you can buy Snapper Sinclair, you can buy Midnight Bizou, and then you have to sit back and just kind of keep your fingers crossed getting to the races, because so much can happen. I mean, they're 1,200-pound athletes. We see on a daily basis what happens to 200-pound athletes. And, you know, they're constantly going out with health issues. So keeping a 1,200-pound athlete, I don't think people realize how difficult that can be.
Oh, it's yeah. You haven't even scratched the surface, right, Gary, on what can go wrong with these animals. I mean, they find so many different reasons and ways to prevent themselves from just getting to the races. I mean, forget about having a horse that's winning races and then taking it to the next level and winning races at the highest levels. Just getting a horse to the races is a huge accomplishment in itself. So it's very drawn out process. And I think that's one of the reasons why from the time that you have either bred a horse or purchased it as a yearling or a 2 year old, the accomplishment of being at the racetrack and watching your horse walk around that saddling paddock and find their way to the winner's circle is so rewarding, because we all know what it took to get there, and it's not an easy path.
It's really amazing. Well, in closing, tell us about the future for Midnight Bizou. What's your plans for her, and how is she doing today?
Midnight could not be doing any better. She came out of her last race at Saratoga in excellent shape. Right now, she's still currently training at Saratoga, where she'll stay till right about the time the meet ends. She'll ship out to Keeneland with the rest of Steve Asmussen's crew when the meet ends there at Saratoga. And so she'll get comfortable in her temporary home, which will be there in Lexington at the Keeneland Racetrack, where she'll prepare to run next in the Spinster, the Grade 1 Spinster, which will be a prep for her leading into the Breeders' Cup, which we want to secure that elusive Breeders' Cup. Midnight Bizou has a lot of accomplishments on her resume, and the one thing that's eluded her so far is the Breeders' Cup, and that's our goal right now, is get that Breeders' Cup win for her.
Well, on behalf of Capital OTB and all our viewers, we will be rooting for you, and we really wish you the best with her, because she is just a breath of fresh air, and she's, you know, even horse players want Midnight Bizou out there. I mean, she's just an inspiration, and she's such a fan favorite, and we really love her, and we really wish her the best going forward. And I can't thank you enough for your time today, Jeff, and we really appreciate having you on board today.
Well, thank you so much, as always, Gary, for the kind words, the great work that you do as an ambassador for our game, and we'll hopefully continue to be talking about Midnight Bizou. Appreciate it.
Well, it's Gary Contessa with Capital OTB with Jeff Bloom, and a little insight into his life and the owner and the stable of Midnight Bizou. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. Nice job again by Gary Contessa. And as you can tell from the comments on Midnight Bizou still being stabled up at Saratoga and leaving at the end of the meet, that was done a couple weeks ago. And again, these are we still had a couple in the can. From Gary Contessa, the interviews he taped up at Saratoga, but a nice job there with Jeff Bloom. As I said, we've had him sit in with us up at Saratoga a couple of times in past summers, and he wasn't in town this year, I don't think at any point, but Gary caught him via Zoom, which was nice to catch up and get a little insight on Midnight Bizou. Midnight Bizou subsequently, over the last few days, I saw that she will head to the Facing November sale, along with Monomoy Girl and Uni, a couple other nice race mares. But she'll head to the Spinster on October 1st. Breeders' Cup weekend is November 6th, November 7th. The Facic Sale, November 8th. So Midnight Bizou, boy, and she is fabulous. That kind of salivating, the Breeders' Cup looking for, Midnight Bizou, Monomoy Girl. That's shaping up to be a good one. Certainly. I mentioned earlier with the Woodbine Mile card kind of being the gorilla in the room as far as stakes action on Saturday. I was curious what their handle was. I hadn't seen any numbers. While that was playing, I kind of looked up. I couldn't find an overall handle number or comparison, but I did read one of the articles said that $3.1 million was wagered on the Woodbine Mile itself, which was a record. So no surprise that card yesterday up at Woodbine attracted some attention from the bettors. Again, being in a little bit of a lull period. Santa Anita not having started up yet. And again, I've said this the past few days, if you haven't been watching, Santa Anita was supposed to start yesterday, I think was going to be their opening day for the fall meet. But they pushed it to the end of this week in response to the air quality issues with the wildfires out there. So Santa Anita comes back into action. I think it's Friday. They're coming back now with their opening day. But Belmont got underway this Friday. Again, at Belmont Oaks yesterday. Nice performance by the European shipper, who looks to have some talent. And we'll see where that one potentially the QE2 at Keeneland next. Just before I wrap up, I had some news and notes that I haven't gotten to either yesterday or today. Article in the Racing Forum from Matt Hegarty. New Jersey Commission adopts rule prohibiting jockeys from using whips to encourage mounts. Certainly the most restrictive rule in the United States by any means, now in play in New Jersey. The New Jersey Racing Commission rule will allow jockeys to use a whip for, quote unquote, reasons of safety, only for reasons of safety. It's going to start next year with the start of the Monmouth meet. It was going to start this year while Monmouth was underway, but the commission agreed to postpone until next year, and they had a lot of pushback from the Jockeys Guild. It's going to be interesting to see because the rules, you can still use the riding crop, but for reasons of safety, you know, guiding the horses or whatnot. So stewards are now making that kind of a judgment call, and boy, we'll see how this works out. And again, it'll be a year down the road. And the Jockey Club was pushing back before the rule was okayed this week. So we'll see. I'm sure they'll continue to push, but we'll see how it plays out in New Jersey. Again, it just seems like there are some unintended consequences to that they may not have considered and may not want to deal with. And I think you can make it safe and even have rules that kind of address that, and which I think most rules and most jurisdictions already do to some extent, but this one seems to maybe have gone too far in one direction. We'll see what happens in New Jersey. Again, it'll be a year before it goes into implementation. Also, Larry Colmus is again going to be subbing for Trevor Denman out at Del Mar. If you remember, Larry called most of the summer meet. He had to miss a little bit of the end of Del Mar because he headed to Kentucky to call the Kentucky Derby for NBC, but he had most of the summer meet. And that was because Trevor Denman, who lives in Montana, I believe. I'm being told that is correct from the control room. Has a farm in Montana. And he was just a little bit concerned about his family and the pandemic for the summer meet. So he elected to stay home. But his game plan was to come back for the fall meet. Well, given the situation with the pandemic, which is still obviously a problem around the country, the article that I had pulled up noted from the Blood Horse noted that Denman was kind of torn, and he had made the commitment to come in the fall. And I think eventually it sounds like the Del Mar people said, if you're concerned, you know, we'll work it out. And so Larry Colmus will again sub for Trevor Denman at the fall meet, the 15-day fall meet out at Del Mar. Win, the very nice winner, one of the better races up at Saratoga this year. Win, getting the job done in the 4-go. Latest news is he will train up to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. That comes from Dave Grenig in the racing form. Mike Trombetta, I'm just worried he put it all out there for that race, the ground loss and all the work he had to put it in to get it done. I'd rather take my best shot at the Breeders' Cup. So it looks like a Breeders' Cup mile and training up to it for win. Swiss Skydiver being considered for both the Preakness and the Keeneland race, so we'll see where she goes. I was just outside the winner's circle after the Alabama, and Ken McPeak said that the game plan was going to be potentially the Preakness. So we will see. I mean, they were thinking about it already then, but now they've kind of validated that, or they're looking at either the Spinster or the Queen Elizabeth II at Keeneland. So McPeak quoted as, we're just looking, we're going to look at the probables, possibles, and pull the numbers and see how she might fit. We haven't ruled out the Spinster, or the QE2 is still preliminary. We've got plenty of time. She's supposed to work this weekend, which would have been this weekend. I haven't seen a workout report on her, though. I haven't looked, but you would think, they still have time. I was going to say, you would think after this work, they may pull the trigger and make a decision, but I guess there's still some time for that to come down to either Keeneland or the Preakness for Swiss Skydiver. All right, that catches you up with some of the news over the past week or so, past few days. We took a look at the top of the show at some of the stakes action yesterday, Woodbine and also the Belmont Oaks. Some nice stakes action, again, north of the border, though, with that Woodbine mile card, Starship Jubilee. Boy, she's fabulous. And you would have to think, with the win in your end, she'll be headed to the Breeders' Cup. So it's been a fun year all around, and it's a shame that fans haven't been able to get on the racetrack, because really all of the divisions have played out very nicely. We saw a lot of the top performers up at Saratoga and kind of validate their talent, and that has continued at some of the other venues with a horse like Starship Jubilee, so much fun to watch. So it's just it's so disappointing that the fans haven't been able to go on track, but we're able to watch via simulcast signals and television and whatnot, and so this will be a different year, but a special year with, again, a really good group of performers in the various divisions across the country. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for Racing Across America for this Sunday morning. Again, be back in a couple hours or so with OTB Live for Sunday afternoon. We're going to take a look at a little Woodbine. Coming up at Woodbine, didn't mention it earlier specifically. I alluded to the two stakes, but this is always part of the Woodbine Mile weekend. Woodbine Mile on Saturday, Sunday. The two really nice two-year-old turf stakes for the boys. The Summer will be race 7 this afternoon. And for the girls, the Natalma, race number 9. And as usual, kind of fun fields in both of those with Breeders' Cup juvenile turf implications in both events. But we'll look at Woodbine a little bit later. We'll look at some Churchill. We'll look at, of course, some Belmont as well. And again, that'll be a couple hours down the road. Don't forget, you can stop here at the Clubhouse Racebook and enjoy all the racing action this afternoon and all the football action as well as we continue NFL Sundays, week number 2 of the NFL season. Love to see you down here. You can grab a little lunch as well. Don't forget, you do have to wear a mask, and there's some social distancing and whatnot. But when you sit down at a carrel or one of the tables or whatnot, you can take the mask off. Just the same rules that are in place at all the other venues and businesses during this current situation. But we'd love to have you down here, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Going to wrap it up for Racing Across America. Again, be back in an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. We will see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.